Shall we bow our heads for prayer? Loving Heavenly Father, we thank you again for this beautiful day and for this time to gather together. And Lord, we are thankful that there is a new heavens and a new earth promised wherein righteousness dwells and where the lion will rest with the lamb. That Lord, while we're in this world of sin and we're dealing with the consequences of the great controversy and pests and disease, we ask that you will give us wisdom that we can cooperate with you in your plan for the garden and for nurturing us and healing us. And we just ask for your presence as we talk today and share. In Jesus' name, amen.
The farmer knows just what to do, for God has given him understanding. The Lord of Heaven's armies is a wonderful teacher, and he gives the farmer great wisdom. When it comes to pests, we need great wisdom. And so we need to turn to him who has created the world. This is a kind of a difficult subject. Taking care of pests and diseases requires a lot of intelligent thinking, observation, wisdom. It's not really, what can I spray to make these bugs die, kind of thinking. Pests are an indication of an imbalance, a symptom of a problem that is deeper. Any natural or organic remedy, even a commercial chemical spray, is just palliative care. It's a temporary solution. It isn't probably, it's not going to cure the issue. So why do you have the problem in the first place? Well, the great controversy is pretty clear why we have the problem in the first place. But typical farming culture has us thinking that we need to buy bottles and bags of this and that and the other. And sometimes I've kind of felt a little guilty because, you know, I have this bug here, but I'm not spraying it because I have a concern about doing so. But am I a real farmer if I'm not taking care of it and being right on it right away? So I've come to the place where I've rejecting. It's a process. It's such a process. The palliative care, that palliative care stuff is benign. Nature has a very delicate balance, and we need to preserve that. Even organic natural pesticides are not always safe to the microbial world in our soil. The symbiotic relationship between plants and beneficial creatures and critters and helpers in our garden is a balancing act. I told you the story of when we did the lasagna gardening and we ended up with a huge problem with earwigs. And that was just a plague of unimaginable, who'd have thought we would have had so many earwigs that you couldn't even step outside without crunching them all over the place. We had messed with the balance in nature. We had all these piles of things that weren't composted, and we were trying to garden in that, according to the book. But it didn't work where we lived because we were on the edge of an orchard and there were earwigs to begin with. So it just gave them a place to develop their families and produce, and it became a nightmare. That took years to take care of, by the way. So I used to think I heard lecturers talking about pest control, and I thought I would hear them say that if your plants are super healthy, the bugs won't eat them at all. And then I would go watch a perfectly healthy, beautiful plant get chewed to bits, and I think somebody's not very smart somewhere. It's either me or, you know, I'm not understanding something. The truth is, this idea that if you have healthy plants and soil and you won't have problems is a very hippie philosophy. The great controversy is real. There are problems in our world, and we're going to face them. And it's true that pests attacked the weakest plants. So there's a little bit of truth and a little bit, you know, it's just healthy plants are still an important line of defense. In fact, our first line of defense is prayer. And our second most important factor is healthy plants. So just understanding that there's a balance there. A few years ago, I went to an Ed Agra, not here, and I attended a class on pests. And the man was very knowledgeable, and he talked about how pesticides were not the answer, and we were doing it all wrong, even in the organic world. And I didn't understand a thing. I was so lost in that class. The biggest takeaway I got from the class is he had a recipe for squash bugs, to kill squash bugs. And I was so excited. I wrote it down and I put it on my Instagram. I was really excited. And I never had a squash bug again to even try it on. So I was like, wow, this is magic. So I have the recipe in here for you, but I've never had a chance to use it myself because I've never had another squash bug again. And that's really strange because we were struggling with them beforehand and everyone I know has squash bugs. So I don't know why. Something changed. Prayer, yes. Praying for our gardens is very important. And the Lord hears and he does care about our gardens. Yeah. So recently, as I was preparing this class, I pulled out my notes from that class I had taken at Ad Agra that I didn't understand at all. And I was surprised to note that I had actually developed over time an understanding. And what's more, I kind of aligned with his philosophy after all. So it takes the Lord time to teach us. And I'm a prime example of someone who's constantly learning in the garden. I don't have it all figured out, and sometimes I do go back to those palliative measures while I keep trying to understand. But we can always go back to the Lord is a wonderful teacher, and he gives the farmer great wisdom. So that's found in Isaiah 28, 26 through 29. So hopefully I have a few things we can share today. We are very blessed where we live, and we don't have a lot of pests. We have some. Earworms, corn earworms is a big one for me. Flea beetle, and you'll see a picture of her potatoes got really, really hit hard by the flea beetle. I think flea beetle has spread everywhere. Earwigs can be a problem, but not currently. Slugs can be a problem, but I now know why I have slugs, so now I can correct that. What are some other things? Oh, cutworms. And I figured out how to handle them, so I'll share a few things like that. I just read a book called Vegetables Love Flowers. It's not your typical book. I'm forgetting to turn, but it talks about flowers. It's not your companion planting book, you know, carrots love tomatoes, that kind of thing. This lady, Lisa Mason Ziegler, is fairly well known in the flower world for her cool flower crops and how to grow them. She's a teacher at heart, and so I've been watching her YouTubes, and they're very, very informative, and I've learned a lot from her. She talks about bringing the flowers into your vegetable garden. And she did that. These are my girls with some of the flowers that we grow. Lisa Mason Ziegler. She started off as a novice in the garden. She married late in life. She married a man who had land. They had gardened there for generations. His grandparents had farmed there. He was farming there. So she was like, okay, I'm going to take over this garden. And she didn't always listen to his advice. Some of the things that she learned was when he said, you've got to wait to plant the green beans until this bug is done its thing. she thought, I want to get a head start on the beans. Let's get them planted. And then the bugs came and destroyed her beans. And he said, no, you have to wait until that life cycle is over, and then you can plant your beans and you won't have any problems. So there's a lot to learn from those around who have garden. Anyway, she became a flower farmer, but she continued with the vegetables, and she brought flowers into her garden, and she learned some very interesting things. Some flowers literally discourage pests from flourishing. Some attract pests away from the main intended crop. And the most interesting, she thought, was that the pollinators, such as butterflies and bees, and beneficial predators, such as birds and ladybugs, began to flock to her garden. This increased the biodiversity throughout, which brought an unexpected change. She began to watch assassin bugs destroy aphids, birds eating cabbage worms, and their young, and with their young. Spiders, frogs, lizards, ants, dragonflies, and she even got used to the non-poisonous snakes in her garden. She saw a shift happening where these creatures were coming in, and they were taking care of a lot of the pest problems she had. She started to provide bowls of water for the bees, you know, shallow bowls, and birdhouses, and feeders, and native plants. She let the sunflowers go to seed so that they could have something to eat. It took a long time, but healing began to come to her pest issues. And she learned about timing also. She learned about using protective barriers, and she still hand picks the Mexican bean beetles early in the morning off her plants. So it's learning to work with nature. She's building a community in microbial, insect, and the creature world. So last summer was our third summer on this new property. The man who owned it before was organic gardening and haying, doing hay on the other half. He was organic gardening, but he was definitely dumping whatever without soil testing and without, you know, he just kind of, and he's a really great guy. The very first day we started gardening, he came over to tell us we're doing it all wrong. And but anyway, so just very different style, I would say, which is fine. Everyone has their own, and that's good. He's an older man, so everything was big tractor. And if he didn't weed by hand, it's just everything was machinery, which is fine. But I'm beginning to notice something changing in our garden. The beneficial insects are increasing exponentially. We have ladybugs like I have never seen ladybugs before. We didn't that first year. But now when I take buckets of flowers to the florist, I'm shaking the ladybugs out of them, and I get into the store, and I'm like, I'm so sorry. They're just crawling out of the flowers, and they're like, that's fine. We love ladybugs. So I'm really behind on this. I don't know where I am on here. But anyway, so we have other things happening as well. Earthworms, what do you call them? Night crawlers? So thick that when I planted my onions this spring, I thought the dogs were going in there and wrecking everything. But it turns out the night crawlers were pushing the onions back out of the ground when they come out to do their little courtship thing in the night. And you watch them come out of the ground and dance, and it's quite crazy. But I replanted my onions, 2,500 onions, almost every day for 3 weeks. So I'm not planting in that spot anymore. I'm glad for those earthworms. I'm totally happy to have them. I just need to figure out a different way to plant my onions. Or maybe I'll need to do it later. I don't know. I've got it. Okay. So I appreciated Lisa's list of ways gardening gets easier when working with nature. So we'll just go through them real quick. Vegetables. Planting vegetables into their favored conditions and at the right time leads to strong, more productive plants with fewer pest issues. Flowers. Including a strong dose of flowers from early spring to frost will attract and keep nature's workers year-round in the garden. Adding organic matter to the garden soil on a regular basis will build and sustain healthier soil with each passing season. The plants. Starting with healthy plants has an important impact on the life of the garden. This means starting from seed whenever possible. Your healthiest plants are the ones you yourself plant. If you go to the store, you don't know how old they are. They could be root bound before you get them. Day-to-day living, prevention is key. Spending a little time setting up the garden to prevent issues such as weeds will save a whole season of chores. Providing habitat, giving the beneficial creatures a place to live, eat, and raise families means they will stay in or close to the garden along with their offspring. Habitat is all about building community. The movers and the shakers. Learning to make and have compost and leaf mold on hand as part of the garden's landscape makes caring for the soil easier. These are my grandkids with our dahlias that are bigger than their own head. Okay, so sometimes you have to eliminate the vegetable that the pests are determined to have. Sometimes. So I am having a problem with the flea beetle that she's having a problem with my potatoes. And I didn't know what it was the first 2 years. And then the neighbor came by and he was like, oh, you've got flea beetle. I thought little flea beetles were on the top. He's like, yeah, the larva's under the ground. They're the ones making scabs all over your potatoes. So while I don't have enough flea beetle to actually cause that much damage in the top, the potatoes were not pretty. And I was getting a little discouraged. And so he told me what to do. You need to go get some nematodes and you need to spray it on there. Nematodes are a beneficial, what do you want to call it? Organism that will kill the larva in the soil. So I'm thinking this year I'm not going to grow potatoes. I'm going to give it 1 year rest, and I'm still going to do the nematodes, and I'm going to just try to really stay on top of it and see if I can skip a year and then maybe grow potatoes that won't have those little scabs on it, because I can grow a lot of potatoes, but if they're not pretty, nobody wants to peel them. Really, nobody wants to peel them. I've grown 1,000 pounds at a time, and, you know, it's great, but no fun. So planting trap crops gives, so the main reason measures this woman was take was willing, the main measures she is willing to take to eliminate pests are hand-picking, blasting with water, or using beer traps. Planting trap crops gives her a place to hand-pick the Japanese beetle until she's nearly eliminated it altogether. She just does it faithfully, always. And while she still has some slugs and snails, they don't seem to do as much harm because she has many slug predators in her garden. Starlings actually have a good use. Lizards and snakes and foxes also help her with that. She mentions slug traps and how to set them up, and I may give that a try in my strawberry patch on raspberry fields. The reason I have slugs is because we're doing a lot of mulch. So that's where, you know, finding the balance. So I'm going to have to find some ways to handle the slugs if I want to have mulch, because I can't weed everything. So, you know, I have to think it through. So this is kind of radical thinking in today's world. She doesn't use pesticides, period. She doesn't even use the organic ones. and she's a successful farmer. She does use BT, that natural, inside her grow room, because that comes in the soil you buy to make the potting mix to plant your seeds in. And so she does use some BT in the water occasionally to get rid of those. There are some that are specifically hating on neem oil as it kills bees and beneficials. I eliminated it because I don't like the smell and I don't like working with oil in the garden. Some people like Bob Gregory, who's been a speaker here at AGRA, even goes so far as to discourage using diatomaceous earth. I don't like diatomaceous earth, but she does. So there's, you know, what's that?
That I have used it. We have grasshoppers rotate in our region, and if it's very wet and cool in the spring, then we don't have them. But if it's, you know, the previous year we had a plague, then the next year we have more. And so one year they were coming up in the strawberries, and I could see that there was a whole slew of baby ones emerging there. So I took the diatomaceous earth, and I actually took a gallon jug that's kind of square. You've seen these. I burrowed holes with a hot nail in the front, and then put the diatomaceous earth in there dry, and then I just beat the side of that jug, and later, because I was having to do it bending down, I took a stick and it just would puff the diatomaceous earth out where the grasshoppers were, and that seemed to take care of it, and I just didn't want them to get everywhere else and start making more effect the next year. So
the thing I don't like about diatomaceous earth is if it gets in your lungs, it does the same thing to you, cutting and whatever, that it does to the bodies of these little creatures. So with that said, I'm going to talk to you about some organic pest control things that are being used today. So BT, I'm just going to say the short name. Quoting from the National Pesticide Information Center, BT is a bacterium that is found naturally in soils throughout the world. To reproduce, BT makes spores that grow in new bacteria. BT spores have protein that are toxic to insect larvae when eaten. And because BT comes from a natural source, it's called biopesticide. In general, biopesticides tend to pose fewer risks than the typical human-made pesticides. The spores get in the gut of the insect larvae, and after the larva eats them, and it talks about the pH and all of that. It gets a little complicated, but in order to activate the toxin, the pH has to be high, and the insect dies, basically, of infection and starvation. Death occurs within 1 to 5 days. Young insect larvae are most affected, and this will kill your ladybug larvae as well as your other beneficial larvae. So we have a good thing going on with the ladybugs at my place, and I don't want to destroy that. So this is where you're having to make a decision, you know. What are you going to do? Are you going to just do it on this little tiny spot and hope you don't affect the rest of the garden, whatever? Or am I going to just find another way to deal with this insect? Spinosad. The pictures don't really match. I did this late last night, and I was trying to find pictures that match, and finally I gave up. I'm like, I'm tired. These are just garden pictures from our place. So, quoting from the National Pesticide Information Center, spinosad is a natural substance made by a soil bacterium that can be toxic to insects. It's a mixture of two chemicals called spinosin A and spinosin D, and it is used to control a wide variety of pests that include thrips, leaf miners, spider mites, mosquitoes, ants, fruit flies, and some of your beneficials. Many products contain spinosad and are used on crops or ornamental plants. Spinosad affects the nervous system of your insects that eat or touch it, and it causes their muscles to flex uncontrollably, and that leads them to an untimely death, usually 1 or 2 days. I have used it. We do have leaf miners that affect beet leaves and chard, some of the greens, you know, you see a little trail in the green leaf. That's a leaf miner. But I've learned that I can put a cloth over my, you know, one of those frost cloth over top of my spinach. And then I'm not dealing with the leaf miner. Although the larvae come up from the soil. So I'm not sure, but it really lessens the effect. So that's one way of dealing with it. So I have used spinosad, but I only use it a couple times a year, because I do want to keep my other beneficials. Nematodes, what are they? Beneficial nematodes are microscopic, non-segmented roundworms that occur naturally in the soil throughout the world. Inside the nematode's gut is the real weapon, beneficial bacteria that when released inside an insect kill it within 24 to 48 hours. When it enters the larva via the mouth and different openings, and it ejects the bacteria inside the pest body. These bacteria multiply and cause blood poisoning of the pest, leading to death. They are also covert host tissues. I'm not understanding. They convert host tissue into nutrition for the nematodes to feed on and multiply. As the food sources within the dead pest become scarce, nematodes exit the pest and immediately start looking for a new host. So I have used nematodes, and I'm going to use nematodes more for flea beetle. Slugoplus can be used on an organic garden. And I'm going to try it because it does take care of earwigs and slugs. And because we're doing mulch, we have a little bit of both. So it's just a pellet, and then it can be turned, breaks down into a fertilizer later. Do you want to talk about this one?
Pyrethrin. Some of these words kind of throw your brain. Pyrethrins are pesticides found naturally in some chrysanthemum flowers. They are a mixture of 6 chemicals that are toxic to insects. Pyrethrins are commonly used to control mosquitoes, fleas, flies, moths, ants, and many other pests along with your beneficials. So I guess you would want to use them judiciously. Pyrethrins are generally separated from the flowers. However, they typically contain impurities from the flower. Whole, crushed flowers are known as pyrethrium powder. And you may have even seen this for pets, where you can put that on for fleas and things. Pyrethrins excite the nervous system of insects that touch or eat it. This quickly leads to paralysis and their untimely death. Pyrethrins are often mixed with another chemical to increase their effect. This second chemical is known as a synergist. I've used Basic H some, but I think she has more experience with that.
I'm not a salesperson for Shackley, but they have a really good soap that has very little toxins in it. Like it's green, non-toxic, biodegradable dish soap cleaner concentrate. So I put a few drops of that in, like if you're going to do for, aphids, water and a little soap. This'll do the trick for you, and you can use it on your hands. You know, there's no chemicals or fumes or dyes. It's made from coconut and corn, and you can read whatever else on their website. Basic H makes water wetter. 2 times? It says 300 times here, but I don't know what the... On the concentrate. The one I'm buying is a concentrate for the garden. It increases water absorption and thus helps the plants take up more nutrients, and the plants are healthier and increases production. Dish soap? Yeah, when we had that earwig plague, I was using palm olive or whatever it was. Yeah, I have. There's just some things in there that you probably don't want in your garden. So you never spray the water with the basic H on or even soap when your plants are flowering. If you knock off the pollens, you know, it'll wash it away. And then, of course, they're not going to form fruit. I have, because I showed you the system I have for putting in fertilizer into my garden by using that hose in the bucket. My daughter was on that video. I have put basic H in there because I had cutworms so bad when we first moved to the property. And it took care of them. But now I have a better way. So people say basic H will make your plants healthier, but I just don't know what else it's doing to my dirt. You know what I mean? So I don't want to put too much. And so there's another way to take care of that, but we'll talk about that in a minute.
One year I had a slew of blister beetles, and I think it may have come in on some compost. We had gotten some manure compost, and they nearly eradicated our potatoes. And someone gave me a recipe for, and I actually, somehow I couldn't find it, but it was the soap with the water and then some rubbing alcohol added to that. And I think the alcohol just helps to dry those bugs out, you know, so that they can't keep going. Diatomaceous earth, I guess I mentioned that a little bit. But diatomaceous earth is made from the fossilized remains of tiny aquatic organisms called diatoms. Over a long period of time, diatoms accumulated in the sediment of rivers, streams, lakes, and oceans. Today, silica deposits are mined from these areas. Diatomaceous earth is not poisonous. It does not have to be eaten in order to be effective. Diatomaceous earth causes insects to dry out and die by absorbing the oils and fats from the cuticle of the insect's exoskeleton. Your beneficial, although it would also do the same for your beneficial insects. Its sharp edges are abrasive, speeding up the process. It remains effective as long as it is kept dry and undisturbed. So yeah, if it's wet, it's not going to do that same action. As soon as it rains, it is not useful. It's important to know that while it is non-toxic, breathing the dust or getting into your nose and eyes is damaging to your mucous membranes, and you must use caution if you're going to use it. It can be messy, and it does have to be reapplied. So when I did have the grasshoppers, I did have to apply it, you know, I think I did it for a couple of weeks. And that really did seem to make a dent on them, and they didn't spread across the garden the rest of the year. So like I said, I took a jug. A person could probably take a bucket with a lid and take a little bit more drill holes in it or something, and then use that to swing it, you know, pound it or whatever, so it fluffs it across. Horticultural oil. I have used the neem oil when I've had, like I had this last year, I used that for the little flea beetles. Somehow, I'm not sure that it made a difference. Maybe they were just cycling enough. But this year, I think I'm going to have to use horticultural oil on my plum trees, because some of them have plum aphids. And one year I did need to use Safeticide. It's an actual pesticide. That was early on, but we had an infestation of whitefly on the green beans. And so they were pole beans, and the leaves were sticky and the beans were sticky. It just felt like somebody had sprayed honey on there. And so I did use it that year for those, and I was told it was okay for things, but you just, you know, want to use your judgment. safety side, I had used that, yeah. I know this isn't an orcharding class, but we've had trouble with codling moth in our fruit orchard, and I came across a video where an orchardist that was organic orchardist was using molasses and water 50-50 in motor oil jugs, and you put a couple jugs per tree. I'm going to try that this year because it will attract the moth in there and trap them, and they'll go for the sweet. I will also give you a recipe. It's in the handouts for yellow jacket sap trap bait. We have several hundred feet of berries, and sometimes the yellow jackets come out, and you know, some years they're just thick, but they like to suck the juice out of the raspberries and suck the juice out of the blackberries. Just, I mean, when they are the sweetest, they know when they're the sweetest. So, I know that you can use boric acid to attract ants and kill them. So I also heard about this and kind of modified the recipe, but I take a gallon of water, and if you start with some of that water that's hot, your boric acid will tend to dissolve a little bit. It doesn't always fully dissolve. And then I add this much sugar, 8 cups of sugar, which is a lot, at least 6. But the idea is to make it sweeter than the berries. I want them to go for it. And I put just a little bit of yeast in there because that'll expand in their system. And yellow jackets love to go for meat as well as fruit. So anything smelly. Bread yeast. I put bread yeast in it, just a teaspoon. And that really seems to attract them. And then I didn't give you a picture. Okay. I take a juice container. So a 2-quart juice container. And a lot of times they have like a little arch at the top. I cut out that arch on both sides so it has like a window. You can still put the lid on top, and then the bottom remains as a reservoir. You can put a cup or two of this solution in there. And I hang them every 15, 10, 20 feet and stagger them through the garden, and then just keep those full. And take a foam plate and cut a piece of styrofoam, you know, at least 2 or 3 inches, and that floats. And then the bees can land on that and drink the water, and you'll find that the solution does evaporate, so it does go down and you have to refill it, or sometimes you can add a little water. I have not seen honeybees floating or dying in that water. The honeybees, and we don't have honeybees, but the neighbors, people have them around us, and they come to the fruit and they keep pollinating, but I have not seen the honeybee population decrease or that we lose them, but the yellow jackets. And some years when those jackets are swarming, I put those traps out, and it's just a buzz. You go out there and you hear this buzzing, and a week later, it's quiet.
Beneficial insects. So there's a couple websites there. Gardens Alive, I think it's probably gardensalive.com. I don't know if I could click on that. Yeah, it's gardensalive.com. Okay, go back to my thing. You can look on these websites. There, Arbico Organics has a lot of information, has a lot of stuff. So I find it helpful. You can buy the nematodes there. They come and you have to put them in your fridge right away. So it's better to buy them when it's not too hot outside also. Okay, we're going to talk about a few beneficials. And I'm going to let you talk about this one.
I just learned about hoverfly. This last summer we had them. We were doing a lot of repairs on our house, and they come, you know, and they'll hover right over you, and you think they're going to sting you. But we just had a bunch of them, and in preparing for the seminar, I ran across that hoverflies are actually pest predators, and I didn't know that. With their black and yellow wing covering and striped abdomen, hoverflies might look like bees or wasps at first sight. But because they are flies, they don't sting. Not only are they harmless, they are highly beneficial insects whose larvae provide natural insect control by feeding on aphids and other small insects. Hoverflies also play a significant role in crop pollination. Therefore, it's a good thing when you see hoverflies in your yard. If you haven't spotted any, there are ways to attract them with your favorite flowering plants. I got that from the spruce, why the hoverfly is good for your garden. And it just made me think we had a bunch of them, and there were some pests that were less this year. So hopefully we'll be able to have them more often. Birds are a very good thing to attract. So when you're planting flowers and you have your foliage plants, your berries and your trees, the birds like it, especially as the summer moves along and it's where it becomes hot and dry. They love the garden. It is a good idea to put some water out for them where they can drink. This is a finch. We have bluebirds and finches and cedar waxwings and all kinds of little birds that come in. Ladybugs. Did I have another? Oh, I thought I had a ladybug picture. In February, we live on a knoll top, and there's a little canyon down below us. And in February, on a sunny day, when we have hiked down into that canyon, there's this very big spruce tree right along the creek. And underneath in all of the pine needles are hundreds, if not thousands, of ladybugs. And they hibernate there. And if we wait too long, they've gone. But this last summer, I noticed that we had more ladybugs in our garden. And it may be because I had more flowers planted. I put the alyssum. Was that picture there? You can kind of see it there along the tomatoes. I put alyssum underneath the tomato plants. And I'm just wondering if that didn't increase the amount of ladybugs that we had this year. Also, if you would like to have a bee that is a superior pollinator, check into the mason bees. Mason bees come out earlier. They come out earlier than honeybees. They are highly effective and solitary bees. They work individually. They get along with honeybees, and they are safe and gentle. Scientists believe it takes roughly 100 honeybees to do the job of one mason bee. Yeah. Incredible 2,000 flowers may get pollinated daily thanks to the mason bee. Did you know that honeybees pollinate 5% of the flowers they land on, while mason bees have a success rate of 95%? So they don't take the care that honeybees do. You give them a little house. There's little bamboo, look like straws that they come in and they supply you with. You can get some more straws, but they will lay their eggs down in those little bamboo. And as it's orderly, so they come out in the right way, but they will emerge in the spring. They should be taken at the little house should be taken down and stored away from superior freezing temperatures, because they don't handle that over the winter. But then you put them back up early in the spring and they go to work, and they're very effective in the orchard and the garden.
Did you know ladybugs bite? Yes. They bite hard. Generally, the ones in your garden are not going to bother you. I think it's certain times of migration or whatever. We hike a mountain called Mount Kashmir, and it's quite a hike. You cross valley and lakes, and then you go way up this mountain, and deep snow, and then you're crawling, you know, to the very top. And at the top are all these masses of ladybugs, and they bite. Mm. Terrible. Okay. So, pests. Know your enemy. We've heard that line before when we were talking about weeds and stuff. Know your enemy. Identify the bug that's bothering your garden. Learn its life cycle. Learn its reproduction habits and what the temperature range is for their season. It may be that you can plant your beans before or you plant your beans after, or whatever it is that you're having a problem with. Know what their moisture requirements are. Understand the weather and environment that affects them, their feeding habits, and their dormancy cycle. So all these things are important to know if you're going to work with a pest that you're wanting to get rid of. Okay. First consideration should be to manipulate the host to the disadvantage of the pathogen or pest. In other words, you may need to plant your intended crop sooner or later to avoid the life cycle of the pest, or perhaps different varieties of plant may not be so attractive to that particular pest. Then maybe use that as a trap crop. It may be so attractive that it's a trap crop. So certain kind of cabbage, the cabbage worms just love, but another variety, they don't. So have a few of the ones they love and have your intended crop be the one that they don't love as much. And so when these cabbage get full, you destroy them. And you're destroying all the little cabbage worms. That's one way to deal with it. So plant selection, crop rotation, crop timing, trap cropping, crop location, placement, spacing, mulching, weeds, you know, all these things can increase or decrease depending on what you're wanting to do. Second consideration is to manipulate the environment. Your water, water more, water less, light, air, and barriers. So barriers would be like a frost cloth laid over. What's another barrier? I can't think of them right now. It'll come to me. Yeah, plastic, but only in certain seasons. So, yeah, like dahlias, it's not a vegetable, but you can buy these little net bags to put, you know, candy in or whatever for weddings. We take those and put them over a dahlia and cinch it up. It's a little net. It protects the flower. And then we don't do it. They do it in the south more. But I know flower farmers who do, to protect the petals from being eaten by grasshoppers or whatever. Flea beetle. This is Sherry's picture, and I'm going to let her. Do you want me to talk about it? No, I can talk about it. I'm having some trouble with flea beetle also. I haven't got to that point yet. My plants don't look that damaged, but the potatoes definitely are. And I did talk about this a little bit. So I'm going to use the nematodes. I think I did it a little bit too late last year. And so I'm going to take a break from potatoes completely and do the nematodes anyway. It's suggested that companion planting of catnip, sage, mint, or hyssop may be helpful in discouraging the beetles, since they do not care for the smell. Or you could plant nasturtiums, basils, and radishes as a trap crop because they love those. So they're also known as sacrifice crops. Basically, they're going to be covered with the insect that you are trying to get rid of, and you destroy that plant. So they take the pests away from the good plants that you need. Slugs.
Sure. I haven't had as much trouble with slugs, I think, as Angel has had. And sometimes it's easy to just kind of ignore them and not really. What do you do? Yes. I do get them in strawberries sometimes. So there's a fine line between keeping the balance in nature, and so I don't want to go off in different directions, but slugs do have some benefits to the garden. They do break down garden debris and turn it into nitrogen-rich fertilizer in a similar way that worms do with worm castings. They provide food to beneficial insects and birds. And where you have a significant population, it might be your raspberries or your strawberries. Angela has used the Sluggo Plus for organic gardeners. And I'm going to look into that. I haven't used it yet, but that's good to know about. Another thing would be to set snail traps. And some people put out beer. I'm not sure what kind of traps to use yet for that, because I have cats in the garden and I don't really want the birds or the dogs drinking that. So a little creativity with that approach. Grapefruit peels will attract slugs and make it easier for you to hand pick them and eliminate them. So eat your grapefruit and then
cut your grapefruit in half. You spoon out the good part, and then you put that grapefruit peel upside down in your garden, and it'll track them inside, and then you just throw it away or kill them somehow.
Okay. Yeah. Take it out. Yep. Okay. Planting Rudbeckia and daylilies in the garden is a slug deterrent, and those can also be planted in, or you're needing to plant them in your strawberry field. we have talked a fair amount about earwigs. Do you have more you want to add to that?
No, just what we need to do about
Yeah, them. Basic H was a safer, cleaner option for earwigs. And setting traps using equal parts of soy sauce, molasses, and oil in shallow bowls in the garden. And they'll be attracted to the scent and drown. So rolled up newspapers left in your rows will collect earwigs, looking for a hiding place in the daytime. But then you do need to remove them, what, every day?
Yeah, every day you have to, or at least get the insects out and kill them. But you roll it up. They like places to hide, so anything that they can hide in is great. If you leave your sweater on the ground, they'll be full of them when you go back to get it.
And then again, the Sluggo is effective for the earwigs.
Sluggo Plus, not Sluggo.
Sluggo Plus. Yeah. Dill and fennel can be planted in the garden to deter earwigs. And...
Okay. So I was telling you I had problems with cutworms, and this is an accurate picture of what happens with the cutworms. The plant is growing, is doing great, and then it's cut right off. Hey, who did that? It's all you have to do is dig down a little bit, and I had a picture and I couldn't find it. You just take your finger at the base of where the plant was and go like this, and a big fat green or brown worm will show up. You can kill it right then and there. But you see what I've learned to do. I take straws and I slit them the long way, and then I cut them and make them into little collars for all the things that the cutworms like. So when I plant this looks like a cucumber. Plant my cucumber and make sure the collar is into the dirt, and it'll protect that. It works very well. I didn't know what to do. I hadn't had cutworms before, and we were at this new place, and I was like, I put it on Instagram. I don't know what to do. I've got cutworms. And somebody, maybe two or three different people, said, make these collars. Some people said use aluminum foil, and that's really hard. And someone else said straws, and that worked really well. So it opens up. So yeah, we're running out of time, so we need to move along quickly. Leaf miners, spinosad works for it, or else you use the agarbon or the frost cloth over top of your crops that it bothers. You can plant beneficial plants like rosemary or fennel to discourage them. Aphids, you can make quick work of them by spraying plain water to knock them off. So I'm using a hose with high pressure. And so I had aphids in my greenhouse. Why did I have aphids in my greenhouse? It got worse and worse. And I was selling tomato plants, but I was having to spray them hard with water before I could sell them, because found out, and I read in Elliot Coleman's book, that I was not watering my greenhouse in the winter because, for one, the water's turned off. Two, the water would freeze, so all my crops in the greenhouse, I didn't want to water them. It was creating a problem in the soil that the aphids were just loving. And so I think it's a nitrogen, I don't know if I wrote it down what the problem was. Oh yeah, high nitrogen in the soil from not watering. So after that, on very warm days, I would water my greenhouse and I never had that aphid problem again. So this is a really good example of, I've got a pest, why? The why was I was doing something wrong. And it wasn't something you would think of because I live in the Northland where it's 20 degrees at night, so we don't water. But anyway, I learned. Yeah. So here's, I wanted to give you the squash bug recipe that I never got to use. Repellent for squash bugs. 2.5 ounces of insecticidal soap. Any kind of insecticidal soap, but basic H would probably work. 2 tablespoons of sulfur, 1 gallon of water. Spray around the base of your plant, like underneath the leaf here, and not on the leaf. Do this before the squash bugs start to emerge from the soil. And, the other thing you can do is lift those leaves. Lift the leaf up and see that if there's any eggs on there. You take a piece of masking tape with the sticky side out and you wrap it around your hand and then you just take all those eggs off. And if you're very, if you do it every day, it's okay. All right, blister beetle. I think we're running out of time. We're not even, how many minutes do we have? 3 minutes? Okay.
Gophers, gophinator traps, they are very effective trap. Trap line carries those for a reasonable price.
Yeah, so I just wanted to point out, you see those little holes by the where the bees are? Look like pencil holes in the dirt. I could stand there and watch the little plants go down those holes. And this is my son with his gopher traps line. He doesn't like to do it, actually. He thought he would, but he didn't really. It's too much work. This is an example of a Cabbage Patch Kid. This is our dog. He takes care of our deer. We don't really have deer problem. For disease, I'm just going to be really quick because we won't have much time. Seek divine insight. Observe diligently and use comprehensive solutions. So the Lord is our helper. I feel like we don't have time to go through all this. So what we'll do is we'll save this. And if after the last class we still have time, it's kind of a short class, we can go over these things and make better use of it. So thank you. Does anyone have a question? Yes. Molasses, soy sauce, and oil. So, equal parts. I just used cooking oil. Yeah. You can do the newspaper trick with them, too. Pretty much what you can do for earwigs will work for pill bugs. So, except for maybe that the little trap might not work. But I think you can use the Sluggo Plus for them. Sluggo Plus, yeah. Okay, where's the question? Well, it's my struggle. The gophers are in the same category, right? And, I suppose you could try to, you'd have to have a really small fencing that goes deep.
There is a trap. I think Lynn Hoag uses this. PVC pipe, and you put a little tea on it with a cap, and you mix oatmeal, dry oatmeal, with plaster of Paris, and put that down in the middle, and then you put it in the hole, and so the tea comes up with a cap where you can monitor it, and refill it from there, but that when they eat the oats with the plaster of Paris, the plaster of Paris will swell in their stomachs and harden and kill them. So that's not a poison, but it is an effective way.
Thank you.
This media was brought to you by Audioverse, a website dedicated to spreading God's word through free sermon audio and much more. If you would like to know more about Audioverse, or if you would like to listen to more sermons, please visit www.audioverse.org.